Hello and welcome back to another dreary fanfiction reading. Today I'm going to be reading chapters 34 through 36 of Seven Steps by Dorothy Ann on Archive of Our Own, or alternatively, Dorothy Ann Dreary on Wattpad. If you haven't seen the previous episodes, I highly recommend you do so because we are coming to an end here, guys. Yeah, and now without further ado, please enjoy. Chapter 34. Harry was leaning against the wall outside McGonagall's office and straightened up as they came down. "Professor, what are we..." He spotted Draco and asked, "Wait, you're already here?" "Come along, we have a lot to accomplish," McGonagall said, gesturing for him to follow them as she headed down into the dungeons. "How long were you in her office?" Harry asked. Draco ignored him. "Draco..." McGonagall stopped in front of the Slytherin entrance. "Go collect anything you might need for tonight." Draco hurried inside and grabbed his brewing case. When he came out, Harry was looking more frustrated than before. "I could carry that for you," Harry offered as they walked down the hall. Draco shifted his brewing case to his far hand. "Here we are," McGonagall said, opening up one of the main brewing rooms just a few doors down from the potions classroom. "Draco, you can finish your calculations and Harry can clean and prepare the room." She turned to one of the brewing tables and stool, transfiguring them into a desk and a chair quite similar to the ones in her office. She sat, took out the small bag, and from it, resized a stack of papers and a quill. She only bothered to look up when she realized neither of them had moved. "Go on, we haven't got all night," she said impatiently. Harry's brow furrowed. Draco pulled out a stool and his notes. "We're brewing Wolfsbane. The full moon is in a week." "What? But you would have done that anyway," Harry said. Draco gave him a look and went back to his calculations. "Oh, so... right," Harry said, his voice fading as he began casting cleaning spells over the room, then getting two cauldrons washed and set up the scales. Draco wrote out the new ingredient measures on a piece of parchment as soon as he was certain they were accurate, and passed them to Harry so he could begin preparing them. He finished in time to prepare the aconite himself. Draco poured in the potion base and conjured the flame underneath. "Can we talk?" Harry asked quietly. "No," Draco said flatly, watching for the first sign of a simmer. Harry picked up the first ingredient, handing it to Draco. "What about after we finish?" The no caught in his throat and he wavered. He wanted... "Focus on your brewing, gentlemen," McGonagall said without looking up from her own work. "This is detention, not a social call." "Yes, Professor," Draco said, adding the first ingredient and adjusting the heat. Harry sighed and picked up the second ingredient. They brewed together even better than they had before. Harry brewed the last potion, finishing it 10 minutes after Draco's. It was perfect, and Draco didn't tell him. He wanted to. "Excellent work," McGonagall said, breaking through his thoughts. Draco nodded as he sealed the last vial and slid it into the shipping box along with the others, reinforcing the cushioning charms out of habit more than necessity. "Finish cleaning up, and that will be all for tonight, Harry. You can come straight here for tomorrow's detention," McGonagall said. Harry looked from her to Draco. "But what about Draco?" "I'll walk with him to the Owlry. It's late, and after this morning it's better not to tempt fate," McGonagall said. "But..." McGonagall raised her eyebrows. "Yes?" Harry straightened his shoulders and said, "I'd like to talk to him." McGonagall's expression didn't change. "You may talk with Draco on your own time. It's past 10. You are due in your own dorm." "Professor, you heard me," McGonagall said. "Fine," Harry said. He looked at Draco. "Tomorrow, all right?" he said hopefully before he stepped outside. "Do you need to do anything else?" McGonagall asked. Draco shook his head and closed and latched the top of his brewing case. "You can leave that here," McGonagall said. "No one else will be using this room for the week." Draco hesitated, then put the case under the table, covering it with a disillusionment spell. He followed her out of the room, through the dark, narrow hallways, and up the stairs to the main corridor. "Professor," Draco asked as they turned a corner, "are you trying to keep Harry and I from talking? You don't seem terribly eager to talk with him yourself." Draco looked down at his feet. They went up the stairs and turned down the hallway that would eventually lead to the Owlry Tower at the outer edge of the castle. "I should like to tell you a story about two students," McGonagall said. "The first was pure-blooded, rich, and happened to think quite a lot about themselves. Let's call them Student A. Student A met another student on the train. Student B was raised by Muggles, already had a friend that Student A wasn't very nice to, and most importantly, Student B did not think much of Student A." "Professor, is this necessary?" Draco asked. McGonagall continued as if he hadn't spoken. "Student A became a bit fixated on Student B, always seeking their attention, sometimes quite meanly, and not surprisingly, this did not endear Student B to Student A." Draco ducked his head, feeling a flush of embarrassment rise to his cheeks. "They called each other by their last names as well. Things changed in their sixth year. Student A realized that the life they had been born into afforded them a privilege of not having to worry about war or ideas of purity, and they made a choice to turn their back on the privilege and fight for every witch and wizard, regardless of blood or status." Draco's brow furrowed. "Professor..." "And that change allowed Student A and Student B to get to know one another properly, to start dating, to marry as soon as they graduated, and to have a little boy they named Harry Potter." Draco stopped walking. "James Potter and Lily Evans, Student A and Student B," McGonagall said. She sighed, looking up the tower stairs. "We're almost there." Draco followed her silently up the stairs. "There are differences, of course, but I couldn't help noticing the similarities of your relationships," McGonagall said. She stopped at the top of the stairs. Draco called down his owls, putting the box of potions in its carrying sling and holding up the loops for them to grab. "That's why you were keeping us from talking?" Draco asked as Castor and Pollux's shadows melted into the darkness. "I find that time is the best balm for cooling hotheads. I think Harry could use a little time," McGonagall said. "I wasn't expecting it, but you seem to be keeping quite a level head." "Thank you," Draco said, not agreeing in the slightest. McGonagall rested her arms on the parapet, looking out into the night with a distant expression. "My goodness, some of the fights James and Lily got in when they first got together. I rarely knew when they started, but I almost always saw the end." She smiled to herself. Once, James transfigured Lily into a fox, and she got into his room and shredded most of his clothes before letting anyone turn her back. And when Lily charmed James's hair yellow, he tried to take it off, and it turned his eyebrows and eyelashes yellow as well, for nearly 2 weeks. McGonagall shook her head and stepped away with a sigh. "Well, let's get to bed. You have class in the morning." Right, Draco said. "I'll see you tomorrow in my office at the same time," McGonagall added over her shoulder. Draco paused for just a second to take a deep breath and follow her down the stairs. "Pansy?" Draco knocked on the eighth-year girls' dorm. On the other side, he could hear Pansy and Daphne's voices rise in a brief argument, cut short by Pansy jerking the door open as Daphne conjured a curtain around her side of the room with a look that could kill. Pansy put up her own opaque privacy shield and muffling charms. "What?" "I need..." Draco stopped and held up his finger. "Okay, one, you're not allowed to say I'm too much like my mother. And two, what if I'm too much like my mother?"
"So you can say it," Pansy said. "Yes, it's different when it's me, obviously."
"Obviously," Pansy rolled her eyes.
"Shut up, I need your help," Draco said. "When my mother and father got in a fight, she would give in to him within hours. If he brought her a rose from the garden, it could be over in 20 minutes. She once held out for 3 days, but only because she left the country."
"Has Potter been offering you roses?" Pansy asked, turning to her wardrobe.
"He wants to talk, and I almost said yes already," Draco said. "I'm going to end up right back where I started, and..."
"You've missed a hook on your bra."
"Get Get it then, Pansy said, turning her back more towards him.
Do I have to?
Pansy shot him a look over her shoulder.
Draco sighed and fiddled with the tiny hook, ignoring Pansy sighing at him, finally managing to catch it.
It would have been faster to redo it myself.
I didn't know why you expected any different. I'm not exactly drowning in a wealth of experience, Draco said.
Pansy pulled on a blouse and quickly did up the buttons.
Are we talking about bras or relationships?
Ha, Draco said flatly. Just use a charm next time.
Remembering the correct charm first thing in the morning is far more difficult than just using my hands.
Draco smirked.
Are we talking about bras or relationships?
Ew! Pansy smacked him.
Draco laughed.
I was talking about masturbating. You're the one that...
You're a pervert. Why did you think I was going to think what you're thinking? Pansy said shortly, grabbing the waistband of her pajama bottoms.
Draco turned away, covering his eyes with a hand for good measure.
You're fine with seeing me mostly nude, but my bum is a step too far? Pansy snarked.
I've had enough nightmares, thank you very much.
You're such a cunt, Pansy muttered.
Draco laughed.
So seeing my bum wouldn't scar you for life?
Pansy grimaced and shuddered.
Ugh, fine. I'm done, by the way, Pansy said.
Draco turned back around. Pansy zipped up her skirt and did the waistband clip.
But you didn't win.
I did so, Draco said.
Oh, and you're far too much of a bitch to give in to Potter like your mother did with your father, Pansy said.
I'm not a...
The privacy charms dissolved around them, and Pansy sniffed at them.
Excuse me.
Pansy rolled her eyes.
You could have gone around, Draco said flatly.
It's my room, Daphne said, primly sliding her wand back into her robes.
And walking 6 inches to the left would have been far too much of a strain, Draco said sarcastically.
Daphne narrowed her eyes.
I don't have to be nice to you anymore. How about I tell Slughorn that you've been in the girls' dorm, pervert?
I couldn't come in if I wasn't let in, Draco rolled his eyes. And since you're apparently far too stupid to pick up on this, I'm gay, Daphne. I'd rather watch Blast and Scroots fuck than look at your mediocre tits.
Daphne gasped.
How dare you!
She pulled her hand back to slap him.
Draco caught her wrist.
I'd say you should use your magic, but we both know your wand work is as mediocre as the rest of you.
Daphne's eyes widened, and she jerked her hand away. She managed to glare as she stormed out of the room, slamming the door closed behind her.
Draco, Pansy said tentatively.
What? Draco asked, leaning back against the bedpost.
You told her you were gay.
Draco blinked. He hadn't even realized. He waited for the wave of panic, the anxiety, the regret, but it never came. He actually felt quite a bit lighter, like a weight had been lifted off his shoulders. The only person he had really been worried about finding out he was gay was his mother.
He shrugged. I've done a lot worse than be gay. If someone's going to hold that against me, they can get fucked.
Pansy grinned and hugged him.
Draco patted her back.
Yes, yes, now get your robes on.
Pansy pulled a fresh set of robes over her shoulders. As for your Potter problem, we'll stick to public places and the dorm as much as possible. Eat in the kitchens if he's in the hall, and eat in the hall if he's not there. I can probably keep him away from you for a little while.
Perfect, Draco said.
Pansy went on.
Meanwhile, you need to figure out exactly what you need for him by the end of the day, preferably in writing, so you don't chicken out.
Draco groaned.
I'm buying you time. That's what you wanted, isn't it? Pansy said.
Yes, Draco said begrudgingly.
The great hall was almost empty when Draco and Pansy finally showed. The serving trays vanished when they were halfway through their meal, sending them running to their first class. Draco and Pansy sat at the back of the room, Pansy taking the seat beside Draco. Harry sat with Granger and Weasley, and aside from sneaking a look at Draco at the start, he kept to himself.
I think Potter's being a good boy, Pansy said as they picked a bench in the history of magic.
Draco sat beside the window, taking out his quill and parchment.
Perhaps. Pansy yawned and folded her arms under her head, making a valiant effort to keep her eyes open until the lecture started. Well, as long as I don't have to do anything.
Longbottom dropped his bag on the desk on the other side of the aisle. It proceeded to slide off as soon as he turned around to ask Thomas something. Draco flicked a levitation spell at the bag. Longbottom turned around.
Oh!
He snatched the straps and frowned as it floated up in his hands. Draco released the spell and put his wand back on his desk.
"Did you knock my bag off my desk?" Longbottom asked stiffly.
Pansy snorted. "It fell off all on its own."
"So..."
Longbottom looked from his bag to them.
"Don't look at me. I would have watched it hit the floor and laugh at you," Pansy said.
Longbottom blinked and slowly sat down, still turned to face them.
"Thanks for catching my bag?"
Draco nodded absentmindedly.
"How's the fern? Did it transport well?"
Yeah. Well, yes now. I didn't have the atmospheric charms just right at first, but now it's building up its roots quite nicely," Longbottom said.
"Good," Draco said.
"Did the ferns I split do all right?" Longbottom asked.
"They're doing very well. 5 of them have already started producing sap again."
Longbottom looked relieved.
"I'm glad. I would have felt awful if I had... They're the only plants of their kind, so if anything happened to them, it would be a tragedy."
"You looked into it?" Draco asked.
Longbottom nodded.
"I wasn't able to do extensive research or anything, but it seems like no other ferns like them have been recorded."
Pansy sighed loudly, dramatically into her arms.
"Nerds."
Longbottom broke off and gave Pansy a look.
"I didn't know you were taking history of magic."
"It's an easy newt," Pansy said. "I usually only come to class to take the tests."
"And you're passing?" Longbottom asked.
"I studied Draco's notes. They're 1,000 times better than Bin's boring-ass lectures," Pansy said. She smirked at his confused expression.
"How do you think Greg and Vince even passed their owls?" She pointed at Draco.
"Shut up, Pans," Draco said. Taking that as encouragement, Pansy continued. "All of our years studied off Draco's notes. Well, the ones with any sense did. He's a good tutor, too."
Draco said, "Yes, well, if my friends failed, it would reflect badly on me."
"That sounds more like it," Longbottom said. "And I didn't want Father saying I couldn't spend time with them," Draco said, frowning to himself. "No one else listened to my stories."
"Oh," Longbottom said.
Draco did not want to talk about the past, especially Vince. Luckily, Bins floated through the door, and Draco could focus on writing down the lecture notes.
"Don't forget to figure out what you want to say to Potter," Pansy murmured from the crook of her elbow.
Draco winced, shaking the thought from his head and focusing on class. He could work on that during lunch. He did not work on it during lunch, or transfiguration. He very seriously intended to work on it during dinner, but turned around halfway down the hall when he saw Harry waiting outside of the dining hall, towing Pansy after him.
"He's following us," Pansy said, looking over her shoulder.
"He's rather intense when he looks serious, isn't he?"
"Pansy..."
"I'll distract him," Pansy said. Draco squeezed her hand before letting her go, picking up his pace down the hall. He broke into a run as soon as he turned a corner and headed towards the kitchen. He should have gone to his dorm, logically, but his mind didn't seem to be using logic. The kitchens were safe. They had always been safe. In 6th and 7th year, they had been the only place that was. There were no Slytherins to report on him in the kitchens. There were no Karos, no disappointed, disapproving professors. There were no students who hated him, no children that shied away, shivering with fear when he walked past. As soon as he stepped inside and the portrait closed behind him, Draco was filled with a feeling of utter relief, briefly. Pansy wouldn't keep Harry long, and he had his dratted map so he could find Draco easily if he wanted. Draco turned around, putting his hand on the portrait to push it back open when a hand gripped his robes.
"Mr. Draco has come back to talk with Hadorona?"
Lulu asked. Draco shook his head. "I can't, I have to go." Lulu frowned at him.
It being very important, Huddle has been waiting. She is asking for you and waiting for you, and you're ignoring her.
Draco froze when he heard footsteps running up, and Pansy's muffled voice drifting through. Barmy. Draco went back to his room. He's not here. Draco's mind was blank. He wasn't ready. Lulu tugged harder on his robe.
Huddle is most important, Elf. Huddle trusting you.
Draco looked down, and he nodded, because it was the easier thing to do. Good, Lulu said, reaching up. Draco let her take his hand. He saw the portrait open and Harry through the gap just for a moment before he was pulled away in the swirling tug of apparition. He stumbled as he landed, and cracked his head on the low ceiling, wincing and ducking down, nearly falling over a table that only went up to his knee, but was longer than the tables in the Great Hall. It was lined with little chairs and stools, all different, all made of different sort of wood, shaped in different ways. There were shelves on the stone walls, all made with various-sized boards, filled with knick-knacks, some broken things artfully repaired, others looking brand new, and yet others, small, delicate, and strange, and like nothing he had ever seen before. Despite how odd and jumbled together everything was, it was all made with remarkable skill. The table was level and polished, the chairs looked comfortable and didn't wobble. It all looked sturdy enough to last 100 years. Draco slowly knelt to the ground, rubbing the bump on his head.
This way.
Lulu waved for him to come further down the long, narrow room where there was a sitting area. A fireplace on either side was ringed with sitting chairs and couches and piles of cushions and blankets, all patched and quilted and made of different spare cloth and wood. Where am I? What is this place? Draco asked.
You is in our home. First human ever allowed inside. Hodo Rona said to, you should be feeling honored, Lulu said.
Draco stared at her in disbelief. This is... She nodded impatiently.
The Hogwarts Croft, Mr. Draco.
Chapter 35. Lulu ran towards the sitting area, to the older elf sitting near the fire.
I've brought him, Hodo Rona, and got him to come.
Draco braced a hand on the ceiling as he shuffled after her, trying not to run into anything as he looked around. Huddle Rona stood up from her chair and swept her hand in front of her, and the chairs in Draco's way parted and skidded across the floor out of his way. Huddle Rona, Draco said, bowing his head. I'm sorry to keep you waiting. Rona smiled ruefully.
I doubt that, Mr. Malfoy.
She had two silvery cuffs on the top of her large ears, one adorned with blue crystals and the other engraved with an intricate geometric pattern. A simpler silver cuff was cupped to the side of her ear. She was wearing what at first glance could have been mistaken for a pillowcase, but was closer to a toga with a shift underneath a large piece of cloth draped over her head. It was held in place by a ribbon belt and a pin on her shoulders made from a large black fabric button sewn with black crystals and beads. Rona snapped her fingers, and one of the pillows on a nearby couch doubled in size.
Find comfort. We have much to speak to you about.
Draco rearranged himself, sitting on the pillow.
How did you fare after the battle? Much magic was lost in the damaging of the castle,
Rona said, picking up a scuffed book filled with mismatched pieces of paper.
More in the rebuilding. It took so much.
Her ears dipped.
A child was lost, a weak boy. Two mothers did not bear young. The magic is strong again with the young wizard's return.
I'm sorry, Draco said.
Much is lost in battles, Rona said. It wasn't your war, Draco said. Never is with wizards. Elves suffer anyway, Rona said. But maybe it does not have to be such.
She opened up the book, and smoothing out an old piece of parchment, the copy of the House Elf Treaty of 1104.
You gave us the old contract, so we know what was done, the deal that was made.
I don't know how much it can help you, Draco said.
It helps greatly, Mr. Malfoy. Before, most elves thought this was our choice, our meant-to-be a destiny. Now we know. We were weak, and a deal was struck to make best use of us and us to survive.
Rona flipped through a few pages of something written in a large, simple handwriting, like the careful penmanship of a child that hadn't quite got the hang of writing. Elves always had stories of what was, but never written down. Only I and my eldest write in our croft where learning is easy. Few others can. Other huddles sometimes. Strange ones sometimes. Lulu sat in one of the chairs on the edge of the fire, hugging a pillow to her chest. A few other elves were standing behind the ring of chairs, watching Draco with nervous interest.
"What about reading?" Draco asked.
"Same," Rona said. "Since we last spoke, I have begun the work of collecting stories, writing them down."
"That's fantastic," Draco said.
Rona's ears twitched.
"Your questions found their answers already."
"Yes, when I found the contract, but I..." Draco hesitated. "I'm curious about you, about house elves."
"Why?" Rona asked flatly.
"I grew up thinking..." Draco sighed and looked into the fire. "I was raised to treat house elves like things, and I know I'm not the only one. Most wizards take elves for granted, but the more I learn about you, the more I see how unfairly you've been treated." He looked around. "And the wonderful things you've made."
"We are allowed the broken things, the lost things, the things left behind. We have made with what we are given," Rona said.
"But we tend to vanish broken, damaged things."
Rona nodded.
"Vanished things as well."
Draco's eyes widened.
"You can find vanished things? Where do they go?"
"We have ways," Rona said. "That is not a conversation for now. Now we talk about stories and pastimes, yes?"
Draco nodded and, remembering where he was, took out his watch. "I have detention at 7, and I haven't eaten yet," he said reluctantly.
"Lulu will get a plate," Lulu said, hopping to her feet.
"Thank you, Lulu," Rona said as Lulu apparated away.
"Mr. Malfoy, would you like to know some stories of the past?"
Draco nodded.
"There are stories of old forests, and I am thinking those are the first stories. After that, there are stories of the fair folk."
"The Fae? From before they closed the gates between our realms?" Draco said.
Rona turned a page in her book, running a hand over the writing with a pensive expression.
"Mayhaps they were the ones to shape us elves, to give us magic and use and make us slaves to it. Mayhaps we were made to serve them in their hungry courts and never be able to run away."
Draco said, "Some of our old legends suggest house elves might have been made by wizards. There was some terrible age of magic when many magical creatures were created out of dark magic, like Vila and Kelpies."
"Mayhaps," Rona said thoughtfully.
She looked up from her book with a sigh.
"You were made to treat elves like things. Elves were made to serve. But we are not what we were made to be, yes? We deserve to be more than our making."
Draco felt like all the air had been knocked from his lungs.
"Yes," he whispered.
Rona turned back to the copy of the house elf contract, tapping it with one long finger.
"This problem stops us, and I have not thought of a way past."
"That's what you wanted to talk with me about," Draco said. Rona nodded, looking more hesitant.
"We can trade. Informations and stories. We can serve."
Her ears drooped.
"We would be willing to share most anything for better futures."
"Serve? No, you don't... I don't want that," Draco said quickly. "I would like to learn from you, but not as a price. As friends."
Rona nodded. "You are good for a wizard. You ask, you learn. You are friends to elves. After talking to Huddle Kipper, I am even more sure of it."
"You've spoken with Kipper?" Draco said.
"He came to see some elves from your manor croft taken here," Rona said. "He has told us of your kindness, Time off for working elves, money to buy desired things, freedom to travel. Wizards never given freedom to travel before.
I should have done it sooner, Draco said.
You are young and learning, Rona said.
Lulu reappeared with a plate heaped with food balanced on her head.
Lulu returns!
Rona sighed with a faint smile. Draco took out the plate. Lulu pulled a fork out of a pocket on the front of her smock and held it out.
Can we destroy the contract? Rona asked.
No, Draco said, taking the fork. Or you could, but it wouldn't change anything. I have another copy myself, and I suspect at least one was made for every major family that took in elves back then. I wouldn't be surprised the Ministry has a copy as well, even if no one has seen it in hundreds of years.
If we ask for a better contract? Rona asked.
You'd be refused by a majority of wizards and all of the Wizengamot, I suspect. A few more liberal-minded wizards like Granger would support you, but it wouldn't be enough.
Rona's ears fell. Can we do nothing?
Draco balanced the plate on his knee.
Well, there is one thing. I learnt about it a bit in the History of Magic, the Greengrocer's Revolt of 1724. Wizarding producers and grocers were having trouble competing with Muggle ones, so they got together and formed a guild and demanded protection from the Ministry.
Rona's brow furrowed.
Elves could form a guild?
Draco nodded as he thought. In order to negotiate, all elves must know what they want and ask for it together. You'll have more power if you're unified.
Then wizards refuse anyway, Rona suggested knowingly.
Draco grimaced.
If they refuse to renegotiate the terms of the contract, then you refuse to work.
Can't. Rona firmly shook her head.
If elves refuse to work, then wizards can send them away. No magic. Elves grow weaker and weaker until they are dying.
But they can't send all of you away. Both Hogwarts and Ministry rely on elf labor. I'm fairly certain neither could function if you refuse to work. And St. Mungo's house elves do all the cleaning and cooking there as well, Draco said.
They can send away enough to hurt, to scare elves back to work, Rona said.
Draco frowned and thought. You'd need a safe place to go if elves were freed. You could use the manor. It's over 500 years old with constant wizarding occupation. There has to be some magic built up.
Enough? Rona asked.
I don't know, Draco said. I don't know how much magic you need.
Rona looked thoughtfully.
Lulu patted Draco's knee.
Eat! Lulu brought food. You has to eat now.
Draco sighed. Why is everyone always telling me to eat?
You is too thin, Lulu said cheerfully.
I am not, Draco muttered, stabbing a piece of chicken sulkily.
Hogwarts, Rona said. When the young wizards are here, there is magic enough for all the elves in the land.
Draco said, That would be perfect. You could speak with the other huddles and create a list of demands, then quit working just as the students return in the fall.
A murmur rose up around them. Draco looked around, realizing that nearly every chair and all the standing room behind them was occupied by elves listening to their conversation.
Yes, I know, Rona agreed with grumbled unrest. She told Draco, Our croft too full. Old wizard houses fell during the war and elves came here. We have no spaces left.
Draco nodded slowly, chewing on his bottom lip.
I think McGonagall, the headmistress, might help you. The castle has enough space.
Rona closed her book and set it to the side.
I have much to think on and talk with other huddles to do. For now, we should be eating, yes?
She looked pointedly at the crowd.
Talk can be of nicer things until you're 7 o'clock.
The elves around him began moving towards the long tables. The meal appeared on the platters all along the tables, and the food looked remarkably similar to what had been served for lunch upstairs.
So that's why there's always far too much food at mealtimes, Draco said with amusement.
Rona smiled. We find our ways.
McGonagall was watching the hands of her heavy brass pocket watch as Draco stepped off the stairs and crossed the room to her desk. She snapped it closed as Draco sat down.
You're tardy, Mr. Malfoy.
I'm sorry, Professor, Draco said. I was detained. McGonagall stared at him.
Well, you had best tell me what kept you.
I was meeting with Rowena, the House Elf Huddle Leader, Draco said. McGonagall raised her eyebrows.
Huddle Leader? The head of the House Elves is Raz. I speak with him quite regularly.
Draco blinked in confusion.
Explain yourself, McGonagall said.
Draco said hesitantly,
I'm not sure I should say.
Tell me anyway, McGonagall said severely.
Draco said, Raz is the head of the worker elves. He's like a butler, I suppose. He's in charge of the castle management. Huddle Rowena is the leader of the entire Hogwarts elf community.
Really?
McGonagall threaded her hands together.
So, what I've gathered from what you said is that working elves are separate and different from another community of elves that lives in Hogwarts but I've never seen.
The amount of elves working usually represents only a quarter or so of the size of the entire community. If the only house elves in the country were the ones we saw working, house elves would be more inbred than most pureblood families.
McGonagall blinked. 52 elves maintain the castle and work in the kitchens. Are you saying that another 150 live here, somewhere?
Hogwarts supports close to 300 elves now. They took in a lot of refugees when some of the old pureblood houses fell at the end of the war, Draco said.
McGonagall sat back in her chair.
Hell's elves require magic to live, like we need sunlight. They get weak and waste away without it, the young especially, so Hogwarts is ideal for them. The castle supports the largest community of house elves on the Isles.
Where are they, then? McGonagall asked.
Under the castle. It's like a cellar, but without any entrances, Draco explained. House elves can apparate through even the strongest anti-apparation wards.
How do they manage during the summer? McGonagall asked flatly.
The castle absorbs a lot of magic. They normally do just fine drawing from the stones.
Normally?
Draco sighed.
Rowena said that a lot of magic was lost during the battle. I don't know if enough of it will have been built up by this summer. I asked, but Rowena wouldn't tell me much. I don't blame them. Wizards haven't done much to earn any sort of trust from them.
I have worked here for decades, and I was never aware that there were more house elves than the ones working. Yet, I have never seen a house elf child, nor have I seen any particularly elderly house elves around the castle. They would need a home and someone to care for them, McGonagall said, pursed her lips. She took a deep breath, massaging her temple.
For now, you were 10 minutes late, so you can stay 10 minutes long to make it up. We can talk more about house elves another time.
Draco felt a stillness catch in the center of himself, too loud in its silence. He couldn't tell if she believed him or not, and he was far too afraid of the answer to ask.
For tonight's brewing, you normally brew 6 potions, 2 doses each, yes? McGonagall said.
Draco nodded.
Tonight, you'll be brewing 4 potions of 3 doses.
Wolfsbane is a very volatile potion. The more you brew of it, the more likely a small mistake will cause it to explode, Draco said.
Volatile, but not dangerous. If it explodes, you'll only lose time. So, best you don't make any mistakes. It's detention. It's not meant to be fun, McGonagall said.
You've wasted enough time as it is, and you need to recalculate your measures.
Draco pulled his notebook out of his bag and started writing. Harry looked up as they walked into the potions lab, knife frozen mid-dice, asphodel falling off the blade onto the work table.
Draco stared back.
We haven't got all night, gentlemen, McGonagall said pointedly. Draco hurried over to the table, taking out the new calculations and setting them in the center of the table.
We have to brew 3 doses to every cauldron instead of just 2. It will be far more volatile.
When the asphodel is added, Harry said.
Draco nodded. and the powdered bone, although it's a lot rarer for that to cause a bad reaction.
Okay, Harry said. He wiped the knife off and set it aside, setting up the scales to the new weight.
Draco reached across the table, placing his hand over Harry's.
Harry twitched and looked at him, eyes wide.
After, Draco murmured.
Harry turned his hand, squeezing Draco's, and nodded. Draco held his breath as he sprinkled the asphodel into the last potion of the night. They had ruined the first one when it exploded rather glurpily and left them smelling faintly of swamp, forcing them to start over on it. But Draco was starting to get a feel for how more precisely to add ingredients now. He moved the stirring rod in slow, careful circles. He nodded when it felt right, and Harry gently sprinkled in the bones as Draco continued to stir. They watched with apprehension, but after a few tentative green bubbles, the potion settled, allowing them to add the last and more dangerous final ingredients to finish it. Draco didn't let himself relax until he had dispelled the flames under the cauldron. The potion was the right color and sludgy consistency, but Draco took a tiny sample to test anyway. McGonagall's chair creaked as she stood up, putting her parchment and quill away.
All finished, then?
Draco finished examining the hair sewn onto the poppet and nodded.
Yes, that's everything.
I'm going to retire for the evening. McGonagall opened the door and was already outside when she said, I trust you can finish up here on your own, pulling the door shut behind her. Draco looked over at Harry, who was looking down at his hands.
I'll just crack the door open so the smell doesn't build up, he said, hurrying over to the door and easing it back open.
I didn't really have a chance to think about what I wanted to say, but I know one thing for certain. Draco gripped the edge of the table. I won't apologize for what happened in the Great Hall or in the train, because I don't have anything to apologize for.
Harry slowly let go of the door handle.
Draco held his breath.
You're right, Harry said. I'm sorry about the Great Hall and the train. I panicked.
Draco loosened his grip on the table. Harry didn't turn around.
Listen, when I was dating Ginny, when I was with her, I could forget about the war and everything. It was like being in a world with just the two of us, but she couldn't be with me all the time. She had dreams and things she wanted to do, and I was... Harry.
Harry's head dropped forward, his hair brushing against the door.
I was like a weight around her neck, dragging her down. I don't want to do that to you, so...
Then don't, Draco said.
Harry spun around.
It's not that simple.
It is so, Draco countered. I have no doubt that being with me makes you better. Look at me.
He gestured to himself grandly, lifting his chin in profile. So when we're together, you're generally improved, and when you're not, you can go back to being, you know, you.
You what?
Draco shrugged.
You.
I mean, other than saving the world, you're rather mediocre.
Harry sighed at him. I'm serious about this.
So am I. You sounded like you were trying to break up with me.
It's just...
No, Draco said, nearly stomping on the floor in frustration. I don't want to.
You can't just refuse to break up. That's not how it works.
I can too, and you obviously don't want to either, so stop it and help me decant the last of the potions.
Harry shuffled over and got his wand out, levitating the cauldron while Draco got the funnel under the first potion vial.
Draco could tell Harry was thinking, and his frown meant he was headed in entirely the wrong direction.
There's something, Harry said, focusing very intently on the cauldron.
Just let me tell you something first, then you can decide.
You're not going to change my mind, Draco said.
Harry finished dividing the potion between the three vials, setting the cauldron down before he spoke, too nervous to look at Draco.
I've never told anyone this. He took a shaky breath. When I was growing up with the Dursleys, I kind of just lived from day to day. There wasn't really anything to look forward to, so I just survived and then I came to Hogwarts, and every year there was a new mystery, and someone was trying to kill me, or I was trying to stop them. Draco sealed the vials one by one with melted wax. Harry chewed his bottom lip. I feel like I'm always waiting for an attack that never comes. Everyone says the war is over, that I'm supposed to live a normal life, but I don't know what normal is, and... He swallowed hard. And every time I try to think about the future, I panic. It's so big, and I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I can't stand it. I'm left only being able to manage one day at a time all over again.
Draco put the potions in the transport box and latched it closed before levitating the cauldron over the sink. The other cauldron was still waiting to be washed, and Harry grabbed the scrub brushes, handing one to Draco. They cleaned them out side by side.
Not that the days are bad. I enjoy spending time with Ron and Hermione and you, but at night, when I think about tomorrow, I...
Merlin, I hate it, Harry said quietly.
And on the train...
It's not that I don't know you care, I do, Draco said hurriedly. I was worried, and I wanted to hear you say it.
I know, Harry said.
Draco used an agua menti to rinse the soap off. Harry grabbed a towel from the back of the sink and did his best to dry Draco's hands.
It just felt far too big to say then. It felt like a promise of forever, and I just couldn't.
Just use a drying charm, Draco said.
Your sleeves are soaked, Harry said, dropping the towel over the edge of the sink and taking out his wand. You want to push them up.
You're not the only one afraid of things, Draco said, smoothing his hand over his left forearm.
Oh.
Harry cast a drying charm over both of them.
The thing is, relationships are supposed to have a future, and it doesn't feel right to be with you when I can't even say how I feel because it feels too big.
Draco took a deep breath and let it out slowly. Come on, let's finish cleaning. Harry hesitated and then followed him back to the brewing tables. They put everything back where it belonged and cast a few more cleaning spells around to hopefully get rid of any potion splatters they might have missed.
Will you walk me up to the owlry? Draco asked.
Should I get my invisibility cloak?
Draco shook his head, picking up the box of potions in one hand and grabbing Harry's hand with the other.
Are you sure?
Yes, Draco said impatiently. Now stop talking. I have a lot of thinking to do.
Harry threaded their fingers together, holding on tightly as they walked out of the empty dungeons, through the halls and up the owlry tower in uneasy silence. There was a biting chill in the air as they stepped into the owlry. Draco shivered and called for his owls.
Take this to Kipper, he told them. You know the way.
He waited a beat, watching the two owls fly off before turning back to Harry.
I've heard everything you have to say.
Yeah? Harry said apprehensively.
You're doing it wrong, Draco said with a huff.
Doing what wrong?
Being selfish, Draco said.
I've been selfish my whole life, and I can assure you that when you're being selfish, you're supposed to get what you want.
I'm not being selfish, Harry said.
Seems like selfish to me. You trying to decide our relationship all by yourself, except that you're not getting what you want, and I'm not getting what I want, so I'm having trouble seeing what the point is, Draco said with growing annoyance.
Harry sighed.
I don't want to hurt you.
I don't want to hurt you, Draco said right back.
You haven't...
It was only luck that you weren't hit by a stray hex in the Great Hall, Draco snapped.
That wasn't your fault, Harry said firmly.
Draco rolled his eyes.
It was. It was because I was a Death Eater and because I tried to kill our headmaster and nearly killed two other people. Because I crucioed other students in seventh year when the Karos told me to.
Harry's eyes widened.
You didn't know that part.
Draco crossed his arms over his chest.
Well, maybe we ought to call it off because I was such a horrible person.
Harry shook his head.
That was...
He took a few hesitant steps closer. "It's in the past. You're not that person anymore."
Draco shrugged.
"I don't know. The past is as real as the future, isn't it? If you can be haunted by the future, why am I not allowed to be haunted by the past?"
Because you hurting me is worse than me hurting you," Draco tisked. "Selfish again."
He frowned when Harry didn't respond.
"You don't actually believe that."
Harry glanced down at his feet.
"I'm used to it."
"Well, so am I. You want to turn this into a competition?" Draco jabbed a finger into Harry's chest. "I'm always up for it, Potter. I may not have as much practice as you, but 2.5 years is a good start, and I'm a fast study."
"It's not a competition," Harry said quickly. "I just don't want to hurt anyone I care about."
"And you think I don't feel the same way?" Draco shoved him. Harry grabbed his wrist. "It's not...
What if we were together and I barely slept and was always working and studying and forgot to eat and started to lose weight and became cruel, pushing you away even as I got weaker and sicker until I collapsed? That wouldn't hurt you?"
Draco tried to pull away and Harry just moved with him.
"It hurt my mother. It hurt Pansy. I've hurt the people I loved," Draco said, his voice wavering. "I know how it feels and how very much I don't want to hurt them ever again, but I'm not going to push them away."
"Draco, I need them. I need them as much as they need me, and I..."
Draco pulled his free hand out of Harry's weakening grip, sliding it over his cheek. Harry's skin was cool, stubble prickling under Draco's fingertips. "I might have exaggerated about you being mediocre, although I am entirely biased on the matter."
Harry smiled faintly, putting his hand over Draco's.
"Because you're very clever. You can learn anything provided it actually interests you. You're terribly attractive, and I care about you. I want to stay with you because I care about you."
Harry hesitated, opening his mouth to say something and failing. He chewed on his poor bottom lip and tried again.
I want to...
Draco put his hand over Harry's mouth.
"Let's try this another way. How do you feel about me right now? I don't care about forever. I don't care about next week or even an hour from now. How do you feel about me right now in this one moment?"
Harry pulled Draco's hand away and gently kissed his palm.
Right now, my heart is beating so hard it hurts. I'm happy and scared, but in a good way, I think."
Draco smiled.
"Is that
perfect?" Draco finished, leaning forward and kissing him. He pulled back and brushed his thumb over Harry's lips.
"And quit gnawing on your lips."
"I was nervous," Harry said. "I thought..."
"Don't. It makes me furious just thinking about it. We're not breaking up unless I say we are," Draco said.
Harry opened his mouth to argue, then stopped.
"You're sure?" he asked.
"Yes, you absolute fucking idiot," Draco said.
Harry grinned.
"Even though I don't know how to be in a relationship?"
"Nobody knows how to be in a relationship," Draco said impatiently. "In any case, you have more experience than I do."
"I suppose I do. You seem so comfortable with everything. I keep forgetting."
"It's all about projecting confidence," Draco said.
"I think there's a word for that. It's called bravado," Harry said, with the barest hint of cheek.
"You ought to know all about it then with your Gryffindor nonsense," Draco said.
Harry smiled carefully, wrapping an arm around Draco's waist and pulling him close.
"Merlin, I've missed you. I know it's only been 2 days, but..."
"2 days too many, considering how you've used your time," Draco sighed.
"Yeah," Harry said thoughtfully.
"I want to try being better, although I have a long way to go to catch up with you."
"Being better as in health-wise or being a better person?" Draco asked.
"Both."
"Are we counting everything you've done? Because you've won a war, and that's starting after the war," Harry said.
He thought for a moment and grinned.
Want to make it a competition?
I have quite a head start, Draco said.
I'll catch up in no time, Harry said.
Fat chance.
Harry stole another kiss.
We'll see.
Chapter 36. The next day found Draco weaved through the library shelves back towards the study tables at the center of the room, a stack of books floating behind him, which he disposed on the table currently occupied by Pansy. She had picked the largest table. It was entirely out of spite, since no one would sit anywhere near them, even before. But after the Prophet's articles, Draco might as well have been infected by the plague. So even though the library was quite crowded, they had the table all to themselves. Pansy looked up from the book she was reading, a parchment filled with notes at her elbow.
"What's all this?"
She frowned, tracing the spines with her finger as she read them.
"Did we have to do a report for History of Magic? Aren't these for Muggle studies? You aren't taking Muggle studies."
"Not that you'd do a paper for History of Magic if there was one," Draco said, sitting next to her and taking down the first book.
Pansy shrugged. "What's the point? Newts don't take class scores into account."
"They can help you learn things on exams."
"Or I can just read the paper you write," Pansy said.
"Quit deflecting. What's all this?"
"I'm reading up on labor disputes, and Muggle history has a lot more information on that sort of thing," Draco said, flipping to the table of contents and doing his best "I'm busy now" face.
"Why?" Pansy asked stubbornly.
Draco sighed. "To help some friends."
Pansy's eyes narrowed.
"Who? Did Blaze contact you?"
"No."
"Greg?"
"No."
"Theo?"
"No, none of them," Draco said. Pansy guessed. "Is it Lovegood? Or maybe Longbottom?"
"House elves," Draco said shortly, hoping to shut her up.
"Ugh, you're talking with them again?"
Pansy rolled her eyes.
"I do not understand why you bother. They're so creepy."
"Don't be a bitch," Draco said.
Pansy flipped him off.
"You can eat my entire ass."
"Grow up.
You first."
Draco shook his head and turned to the 10th chapter.
"What are you doing then? I know you don't have any assignments."
"Reading," Pansy said.
"Seems a bit far-fetched to me."
"Ha ha," Pansy laughed flatly. "I wanted to learn the sorts of charms they use to make paintings move. Did you know there are three types? One causes superficial movement, the other can be used in front of what's being painted and actually reflects what the painter sees. The last one, and the most difficult, captures a shadow of the person or animal onto the canvas, like the paintings around the cat." Draco saw a group of three near the back of the library, standing. Granger and Weasley in front, and Harry walking a few steps behind. He was careful to make it seem like he was listening to Pansy as he watched them from the corner of his eye. Harry followed his friends, glancing over at Draco for only a few seconds as he went past a table and flicked something white at Draco.
"You listening? At all?"
"Yes, sorry," Draco said. "My mind wandered for a moment. You were telling me about the intricacies of making a painting move?"
The flash of white had flown low. Draco glanced under the table and found a small paper aeroplane balanced on his knee.
"Mind wandered to Potter's ass," Pansy said sarcastically.
Draco unfolded the paper and found a small note written in Harry's distinct, rough penmanship.
"Might be late to brewing tonight. McGonagall knows, just wanted to tell you. H."
Draco smiled, doing his best to hide it behind his hand.
"You never said how you two made up," Pansy said.
"We talked," Draco added pointedly, "privately."
Pansy rolled her eyes.
"Hoard your dumb secrets, but he apologized, right?"
She held up her hand and pointed to the shadow of the promise string around her pinky.
"This is a lot lighter now."
Draco nodded, looking at his own little shadow of a string.
"Well, good," Pansy conceded.
Draco read over the note one more time before folding it and putting it in his robes. He froze, hand in pocket.
Wait. If he told McGonagall, then he had to ask permission, which means he's leaving the castle grounds.
What?
And if he leaves after his last lesson, missing dinner, but still might be late for brewing, then he needs 2 or 3 hours.
Pansy frowned at him. What are you talking about?
He's up to something, Draco said, looking around for his bag which he had left in his room.
He asked Pansy, Can I borrow a pen and two pieces of parchment?
Pansy took out the paper but held back the quill.
Why?
I need to write to my solicitor and arrange something. I was going to wait until after the full moon, but I'm not about to let Harry catch up.
Draco held out his hand impatiently.
Come on, I can beat him on this one.
Pansy handed over the pen with a grimace.
I don't know what exactly is happening, but you and Potter competing can only mean trouble, and I want none of it.
We're not kids anymore, Draco said, pushing the books to the side.
I can only assume that will make it worse.
Draco shook his head.
Why don't you just tell me about your picture charms?
The next evening, Draco made sure to arrive at McGonagall's office 5 minutes early, asking, as he sat down, Should I take out my notebook? McGonagall took a sip of tea and slowly placed the cup back on the saucer, looking thoroughly unmoved by his cheek.
That will not be necessary this particular evening.
Ah, are we due a proper conversation then? Draco asked.
McGonagall sighed.
I see you made up with Harry.
Draco flushed.
He made up with me, really. I didn't have any making up to do.
Mm-hmm. Try to keep it that way, McGonagall said. She passed a cup to Draco, filling it with tea and milk and sugar without any prompting from him.
I did want to talk to you.
Draco picked up his cup of tea, holding it with both hands and blowing on it to give himself something to do other than be embarrassed.
After yesterday's talk about house elves, well, I have to admit I was concerned. That many house elves would be quite a large addition to my responsibilities, McGonagall said. I spoke with Raz about meeting with this Huddle, Rowena, and he said it wasn't his place and thoroughly avoided the subject after that, even when ordered.
Draco stared at her.
Talking with other house elves was...
McGonagall shook her head.
Equally frustrating. I'm afraid I need to enlist your assistance in meeting Rowena.
Draco's mind nearly stalled out with the sheer number of things that were wrong with everything McGonagall had just said, and yet warned with the fact that she was still headmistress, and, though she had been good to him, he knew that didn't stop people from turning their backs on you if you turned out to be inconvenient or no longer useful.
Mr. Malfoy?
He stared down at his tea. She had kept him out of prison and allowed him back to school, so she could easily do the opposite.
Draco,
McGonagall prompted.
But...
Draco frowned his hands.
No.
McGonagall's brow rose.
I beg your pardon?
No, I won't take you to meet the Huddle, Draco said.
Why?
Draco took a deep breath. I took most of my meals last year in the kitchens, and it was a month before I convinced an elf to even talk with me, and two before one would say more than a few words. I've barely spoken to the Huddle more than a handful of times. He looked up, anxiously meeting McGonagall's eye. And I'm not going to break her trust now.
I'm not asking you to tell the whole school, McGonagall said. I can assure you I won't tell another soul.
Draco felt a spark of fire in his chest, and he did his best to keep it from flaring into anger.
It's not about the secret, it's about trust and respect. Rowena and all the house elves of the Croft, they're not your responsibility. She took the name Rowena when she was made Huddle for a reason. She's wise, she takes care of her own.
Wise? I've known a great deal more house elves than you in my life, and while I wouldn't call them stupid per se, they are a bit simple, naive even. McGonagall said, unconvinced.
Draco put his cup down, clattering and slopping tea over into the saucer and over onto the desk as he leaned forward in his seat.
Naive like a people who can't read or write, who have no schools and were only taught to serve and have almost lost what little history they have? Naive like slaves?
McGonagall's eyes widened.
Well, the elves are not students of the school. They're not children who don't know what's good for them.
Mr. Malfoy,
they need Hogwarts because of the magic here. They don't belong to you or anyone, Draco snapped.
Control yourself, McGonagall admonished. Draco sat back. He pulled his bag open and found his copy of the contract hidden in the pages of his arithmancy textbook, handing it across the desk. McGonagall pushed her glasses down, squinting at the paper.
What's this?
The Wizard and House Elf Accord of 1104, Draco said flatly. McGonagall read it with a frown and then passed it back.
I have to say, this isn't where I expected this conversation to go in the slightest, and I certainly don't see why you would be invested in it.
What? McGonagall pushed her glasses back up.
This does not benefit you, has nothing to do with boredom or revenge, and you have never shown anything other than contempt for house elves.
Draco looked down blankly at his hands in his lap, his eyes slowly focusing along with his understanding.
I understand what it's like to be forced to agree to a dangerous contract in order to save myself and my family.
He curled his left hand into a fist and flexed, the tender scarred remains of the dark mark aching slightly at the pull of his skin. And having that contract ruin the rest of my life. There's nothing I can do to change people's minds about me, but if I can help them...
I think you might be able to change people's minds more than you think, McGonagall said thoughtfully.
Draco glanced up at her. McGonagall took a deep breath and squeezed her eyes shut. You've once again given me a great deal to think on, and once again surprised me. Draco carefully put the contract back in his textbook and away in his bag, suddenly wishing he could just go back to bed after this meeting and not have to focus on brewing 12 doses of a tricky potion.
I think I would still like to meet Rowena, to better understand the situation, McGonagall said.
Draco hesitated. I'll ask Cuddle Rowena, but it's up to her.
McGonagall nodded. That is as good a start as any.
Draco cleaned up the mess his tea had made with a few careful cleaning charms.
Could I head down to the lab early? He asked once the last drop of tea had been scrubbed away.
McGonagall hesitated, then nodded.
I'll join you shortly.
Harry was taking off his robes and tossing them over an empty table when Draco eased the door off the potions lab open and stepped inside.
You're early, Draco finished, sitting on a stool.
Harry stared at him, taking a few steps closer as he studied Draco.
You okay?
He asked, brushing his hand over Draco's cheek.
I'll tell you afterwards, if you want, Draco said.
Oh. Harry pulled his hand away. Draco glared at him. Put that back. Harry looked from his hand to Draco, carefully pressing his palm to Draco's cheek.
Like this?
Mm-hmm. Draco leaned into Harry's hand, closing his eyes. Harry took another step closer, his other hand curling around the back of Draco's neck. Draco let his head fall against Harry's chest and took a few deep breaths before reluctantly pulling away.
Okay, let's clean up and get these potions done so I can go to bed.
One thing, Harry said, pulling Draco back and kissing him far too slow and sweet. Draco huffed at him as he leaned back from the kiss.
What did I say about flirting during brewing?
We haven't started yet, Harry said. And yet I am still thoroughly distracted, Draco said, throwing up his hands in a melodramatic show of pique.
Harry rolled his eyes.
As if that's enough to throw you off your brewing.
It might be, Draco said, taking out his wand and casting a few cleaning charms over the room.
Well, I guess I'll just have to brew everything tonight, Harry said, cleaning the other side of the room.
Draco glanced at him from the corner of his eye and called his bluff.
Yes, I suppose there's no choice.
Harry grimaced.
How about just the last one?
The last one doesn't help me now, Harry, Draco said.
Harry studied him and said, Me messing them all up doesn't help you either.
That's assuming you mess them up, Draco shot back. I know you can brew just fine.
Even you had one explode yesterday with the larger doses, Harry pointed out.
Draco tisked and sighed. Yes, fine, all right, you might have a point.
Then I'll brew the last one, Harry said.
Draco blinked in surprise.
You want to?
I guess,
Mostly I want to see how hard it is, Harry said. You could walk me through it, just in case.
I shall keep my barrier spells at the ready, Draco said.
I don't think you'll need them, Harry said with a cocky grin.
There was a sharp rap on the door.
Comport yourselves, gentlemen, McGonagall said, waiting a beat before she stepped inside. She looked frankly surprised when she saw them.
Professor? Harry said.
McGonagall went to her desk, setting out her stack of grading. I'm not surprised you haven't started working yet, but I have to say I was expecting a little more dishevelment.
Harry's eyes widened.
Professor!
McGonagall sat down with a sigh.
When you've been a teacher as long as I have, that sort of thing ceases to shock. Not that that stops some students from trying.
Draco pulled his brewing case out from under the table, taking out the dried ingredients from the drawers.
Uncover the cauldrons?
Harry shook his head and joined Draco at the brewing table to help prepare the ingredients. The first potion went well, and Draco felt confident enough to talk through the brewing of the second, explaining every step and what he looked for in particular before adding the next ingredient. The third potion, he pointed out anything he missed mentioning in the previous brew.
All right, I'm ready, Harry said, as they left the third potion to cool and turned to the last and final empty cauldron.
Draco saw McGonagall lower the essay she was reading and look over at them, concern creasing her brow. He handed Harry the bottle of base.
Don't rush it.
Easy for you to say, Harry said uneasily.
Very easy, Draco agreed, but I also know you can practically brew Wolfsbane in your sleep.
Harry smiled at him faintly, took a deep breath, and conjured a fire underneath the cauldron. Draco stuffed his worries in the corner of his mind where they wouldn't bother him and focused. In the end, Harry only looked to him for confirmation it was all right once, before adding the moonstone. The end potion had burped a little but had turned out indistinguishable from Draco's previous potions.
So? Harry said as he dispelled the flame underneath.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Really? Harry said, letting out a breath of relief. I was afraid I put the nettles in too soon.
A bit, but the beginning of the potion is the most forgiving, and you staggered out the asphodel and bone enough to recover it, Draco said.
Harry nodded, slowly smiling.
Yeah, you were right about the way the density in the pull changes. It's easier to figure it out that way.
McGonagall stood up and walked over to the desk, looking first in Draco's cauldron with its cooled potion, and then in Harry's.
Well done.
Only because Draco... Your mother was quite adept at brewing. James wasn't bad either, though he didn't have the patience to really do more than the minimum to pass, McGonagall said.
Harry's breath caught, and his eyes widened, focusing on every word McGonagall had said like he was trying to burn them into his mind.
McGonagall smiled softly, briefly patting his shoulder.
I know Severus made things difficult for you, but perhaps you might have a bit of a talent for brewing.
Harry shook his head.
No, I mean, probably not. I've seen Draco brew it so many times.
If you could practice a potion enough to get an innate feeling for it, you could brew anything, Draco said.
Harry and McGonagall looked at him as if they'd forgotten he was there.
Draco frowned indignantly.
Harry does best with magic that's tactile and gives immediate feedback. That's why he's so good with defense. As soon as you learn it, you practice dueling and you can get an immediate feeling for the spell.
McGonagall raised an eyebrow. He rubbed the back of his neck, looking embarrassed.
Are we going to pretend I didn't obsessively watch this idiot for 6 years? Draco said, feeling the start of a blush on his cheeks and resenting it hugely.
Anyway, if Severus had done a better job teaching fundamental ingredient interaction... Well, everyone would be better off, but Harry would probably be marvelous at potions because it's entirely physical and reactive.
That's very interesting, McGonagall said.
We should probably get these in vials, yeah?
Harry ducked out of the conversation, walking over to the other cauldron.
I trust I can leave the rest to you two, McGonagall said with a small smile, gathering up her grating and leaving without another word.
Draco threw his hands up in wordless dismay.
Come on, let's decant these and get out of here, Harry said.
Draco joined him at the table, summoning the glass vials and stand.
Can I do the wax? Harry asked. Draco glared at him.
That's the only fun part. Is it?
Draco sighed.
Fine.
Harry smiled. They filled every vial, and Harry, the kind fuck he was, let Draco dip every other vial in the warm sealing wax. They finished packing the box, cleaned up, and headed for the owl, re-chatting about their assignments and revisions, which was only becoming more intense with every passing day. Harry stopped at the very top of the stairs, looking down at his feet.
You can come further in, you know, Draco said, heading for the windows, his owls already waiting for him.
Hmm, Harry said absently. I don't like being reminded of Hedwig.
Your snowy owl? Draco said.
Yeah, she was hit by a curse and...
Harry shook his head.
What happened to your owl? I remembered you said something happened to it.
Septimus, Draco said reluctantly. He was eaten by Nagini.
Oh.
Draco shrugged.
There was a flutter of wings from up in the rafters, and an imposing horned owl flew down to the ledge and dropped a letter in front of Draco with a huff before flying off. The front was marked only with his name in a sweeping cursive.
Apparently you didn't want to wait until morning, Draco said absently, as he turned the folded parchment over to the wax crest pressed into the back and smiled.
Someone you know? Harry asked.
My solicitor, Draco said, breaking the seal and unfolding the letter as he walked back over to Harry, reading it as they walked back down the stairs.
It's not something bad, is it? Harry asked.
Draco shook his head.
No. I told you I use my solicitor and broker when I want to do things without my name getting in the way.
He waved the letter in front of Harry's face.
This is one of those things.
Harry tried to grab the letter and Draco jerked it away.
Stealing someone's mail is against the law, Mr. Potter, Draco teased.
Harry rolled his eyes.
Don't taunt me with it then. What is it?
Draco hesitated.
It's not set in stone yet, but...
He bit his lip, not being able to keep a triumphant grin off his face, or keep from blurting out, Three mind healers have signed on.
For what? Harry asked.
Don't interrupt, Draco said, shooting Harry a glare before deigning to continue. To help the students of the school. Two have agreed to work weekends for private counseling, and the others want to do group counseling in the evenings.
Wait, you're hiring mind healers for Hogwarts?
Professor McGonagall said she requested funding for it from the ministry and they refused. Draco put a hand grandly on his chest.
So I'm doing it.
You're working with McGonagall to...
Working with? Draco scoffed.
No, she doesn't know. It's the best way to do things. If you offer to help someone, they tend to refuse, being noble or proud or stupid.
McGonagall isn't stupid, Harry said defensively.
I wasn't saying she was. She's too proud, if anything, Draco said.
Anyway, you just do it and give it to them, and then they have to take it, or it'll be a waste.
But that... What if they hate it, or... you? Harry said.
Draco snorted. One, I don't care. Two, they already do, and I don't care.
I care, Harry said.
You're too good, Draco said. It's a wonder you can stand it.
Harry forced a faint smile.
Being a bastard is far more satisfying.
Harry laughed.
Besides, no one knows it's me.
It's a generous donation from an anonymous, concerned, charitable, and very kind citizen, Draco said, his voice syrupy and sweet.
And it's another point for me.
A point for... Oh, fuck off, Harry said.
Draco laughed.
You're just sour because you're losing.
Harry stopped, and when Draco looked around, he realized they were in front of the Slytherin dorm entrance.
Harry shook out his invisibility cloak and pulled it over himself.
What in the world are...
Draco didn't manage to finish asking because he was surrounded by the edges of Harry's cloak, backed against the wall and thoroughly snogged.
See you tomorrow,
Harry whispered before stepping away and disappearing, his footsteps fading as he headed up the stairs. Draco leaned back against the wall until he was sure his knees wouldn't give out, saying, Rude, under his breath for his own satisfaction.
I very much hope you enjoyed this reading. If you did, be sure to check out some of the others I've done. A link to the fanfiction will be in the description, along with a new kind of thing I have. If you're on YouTube. It's like this beacons thing. It's like Linktree, but better. Yeah, it has everything. Everything I have. Everything. Like, literally everything I have. Everything. That's all I can say. Yeah, if you want to send an email, do that. If you want to give a recommendation, there's a form for that. If you want to leave a comment, do it. I love reading your comments. If you like what I do and you want to see more of it, subscribe, follow, do all that stuff. And yeah, have a great day, and I'll see you all in the next one. Bye!